Okay, now it says we're recording. Tonight's lesson, number 17, some can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, at the end for the darkness of the tunnel. I knew I'd messed that up. Some can't see the light at the end for the darkness of the tunnel. And no, Sister Finley, that is not a typo this time. With regard to the text. We're one verse tonight. One verse from Exodus chapter 6. We're going to be looking at a lot of New Testament passage along with this particular lesson. Before we get into that, and because it has been, again, a while since we've done this, let's go back, and I want to start, since we only have one verse tonight, let's go back and cover the first eight verses of this chapter, because we're going to be relying on those, and then we'll look also at verse 9. So let's read the text together before we begin. Exodus 6, beginning in verse 1, then the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For under compulsion he shall let them go, and under compulsion he shall drive them out of his land. God spoke further to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord, and I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, Lord, I did not make myself known to them. And I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they sojourned. And furthermore, I have heard the groanings of the sons of Israel, because the Egyptians are holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm, and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord. And now tonight's text, verse 9, so Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel, meaning he spoke all that we've just read here from verses 1 through 8. Talk about that more in a minute. So Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel, but they did not listen to Moses on account of their despondency and cruel bondage. I realize our text is just one verse, but I think it highlights, we're talking about leadership, and again, I will remind you that encompasses leadership in the home, in the community, on the job, certainly in the Lord's kingdom and in the Lord's local congregation of people where you are members, whether it's Southport or wherever. But this one verse, I think, highlights a tremendous problem. And I want to again emphasize the title of our lesson. It says, some can't see the light at the end for the darkness of the tunnel. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. It's easy to look at verse 9 and say, oh, well, they wouldn't listen. That's true. But unless we understand why they wouldn't listen, then as leaders, we fail to get all that we should from this passage. And we will also fail when others that we're trying to help, that we're trying to lead, whether in the home, community, job, church, wherever, when they also refuse to listen. Unless we understand the why, that's the emphasis of our title. Some can't see the light at the end for the darkness of the tunnel. In the home, but not this limited to children, certainly including them, at work, in the community, whether it's actual or even as we're doing here now, virtually, in the local assembly, were sheep. Let that sink in for a moment. Israel was sheep. We're sheep. That highlights the need for leadership. In John 10, and I'm not going to read this, it's a lengthy reading from John 10, verses 1 through 30. But throughout that passage, Jesus talks about and uses the illustration of him being the shepherd of the sheep, being the door of the sheepfold, the pasture that he provides, all of those things. But the foundation is, the principle that we have to get to start with from John 10 is, we're sheep. Now that has a derogatory connotation to it now, in the last several months. But biblically, we're sheep. And I want to start there because 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 25, and I am going to read this passage, 1 Peter 2 and verse 25 says, "For you were continually straying like sheep, but now you have returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls." Shepherd is translated from the Greek word poimen, obviously used in an official sense for elders in the local congregation as well as guardian in verse 25 is translated from episkopos, which is also used relative to bishops or overseers in the local assembly, shepherds, bishops, overseers, elders. All of those terms are used in Acts chapter 20 interchangeably. We're not talking about in this series of lessons shepherds or bishops or overseers or even elders specifically in the official sense. But we are talking about in these lessons leadership. We're sheep in the local assembly. We're sheep at work and in the community. We need leadership in the home because we're sheep. Now, we also need to be working toward becoming leaders in that, or shepherds, officially or unofficially. That's the point of these lessons. But when we read this verse, Exodus 6 and verse 9, it's easy to read this verse and say, well, they didn't listen, you know, that was their problem. Well, that was one of their problems. We're going to highlight for you three additional to that not listening this evening. I want to go back finally from our introduction to Mark the 6th chapter in verse 34, which simply says that Jesus disembarked from the ship and he saw the people on the shore as sheep without a shepherd. But don't stop there. That's why I like Mark's account of this particular series of events, because he includes that next phrase, "and he began to teach them many things." That's leadership in a nutshell. Seeing those who are sheep without shepherds, needing leadership, and then utilizing the Word of God to teach them many things, and by such, becoming leaders, shepherds. Not necessarily officially as in the local congregation, but certainly not excluding that. So all of these things are to reset the stage and go over. I know I've talked about some of these things before, but to kind of reset the stage for us as we began to look at our text for tonight and gain from it the most, perhaps, that at least I can provide for you from it. You want to learn more, talk to somebody smarter than me. All right, from that, from all of those things, that we are sheep, we do need leadership. There are those who function as leaders already. There's always a need for more. So we're talking about leadership to try to help that situation. But as we look specifically here at Exodus chapter 6, the first thing that I want us to realize is why these people didn't listen. Why this need for leadership exists. And the first thing is because they're sheep and they're not shepherds, at least not yet. Some of these people, Joshua and Caleb namely, are going to become leaders in Israel. They already have 70 elders that are functioning just in some capacities as leaders for the people. But stop and think about it with me for just a moment. One of the greatest challenges of child rearing, raising children, I prefer the term child rearing. They'll grow up if you just feed them and keep them from dying. But we're trying to steer and guide and direct. And that's why I like child rearing. But one of the greatest challenges to child rearing is simply remembering that they're children. I struggle with this, especially when our boys were young. As children, they don't yet possess the physical and the mental acuity or the physical and mental tools to be anything else but children. They haven't had the experience or the experiences that are necessary to be anything else. Why do children do some of the things that they do? Because they're children. Look with me for just a moment to Hebrews, the 5th chapter. And I'll say from the beginning that in Hebrews chapter 5, and starting in verse 11, we'll go down through the end of the chapter. The overall point here to the Hebrews is that it was time past for them to be still functioning and acting like children, to be thinking like children. They should have had, in the time that is concerned here with the Hebrew letter, enough time to have grown up. So understand that going in, but we're going to look at some other factors from this. In chapter 5 of Hebrews, verse 11 beginning, concerning him, and it's talking about Melchizedek and Abraham in the other earlier part of the chapter, but concerning specifically Melchizedek, we have much to say, and it's hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. Okay, they're not listening as they should, so there's an obvious tie-in to our text here in Exodus 6. You've become dull of hearing. Verse 12, for though by this time you ought to be teachers, you should be leading others, and you still have need for others to teach you or lead you. You have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. Okay, that's the primary point that he's making in this text. But I want to look at some of the subsequent or lesser points that he also makes in verses 13 and 14 and draw from that to support what we're talking about here in our text of Exodus 6 and verse 9. So look at verses 13 and 14. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he's a babe. These people are still getting milk. They haven't been to Mount Sinai yet. They haven't gotten meat. They've just been told God remembers them, God is concerned about them, and God's going to deliver them. That's pretty much what they've been told. And they believe that. They've bought in. And then when it got bad, and actually the situation for them got worse, we'll talk more about that later, then their faith wasn't sufficient for them to see the light at the end of the tunnel, which was their deliverance and ultimately Canaan. They're just seeing the darkness of that tunnel that they're in right now, which is the cruel oppression, the cruel bondage that we'll look at again later in chapter 6 and verse 9. But back to our text here in Hebrews 5. They're still babes. They still need the milk. And I think it's Paul who wrote Hebrews. You can disagree if you want. It's okay, I'll let you be wrong. I'm teasing. But now notice verse 14. Solid food is for the mature who, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil. I don't want to belabor this more than I already have. But verse 14 emphasizes that some level of maturity is necessary to no longer be a child. What does it take for maturity? Well, it takes two things. It takes time, number one, and number two, it takes experience. The third thing that we've already seen is it takes meat. There has to be a time frame in which you get milk and thereby grow into that meat. So time is being emphasized and practice, training, if you will, is being emphasized. the children of Israel here in Exodus chapter 6 haven't had those things yet. They haven't had the time. They're just now starting to get some of the experience that's going to provide for them the maturity that will allow them, their senses, that will train their senses to know good from evil. Okay? So do you see how this relates to what we're looking at here in Exodus chapter 6? He's talking in Hebrews chapter 5 to descendants of the people that we're seeing in chapter 6, but there are similar problems in both cases. Both originally in chapter 6 of Exodus and here in Hebrews chapter 5. So the lesson that I needed to learn with my own children is that they were still children. They haven't had time to grow and mature and have the experiences necessary to be anything but children. And we just have to be patient sometimes and allow them to be children until such time has passed and their experiences have been gained that will allow them to mature to be more than children. Well, think about that in spiritual applications. Now, I know we've been looking at Hebrews chapter 5 with regard to spiritual applications, but more specifically to leadership. There are a lot of spiritually immature people that need leadership in our local congregations, certainly in the Church Universal Brethren that we might know in other places that we could help and provide some leadership for. There are some things that because they are still spiritually immature, spiritual children, they just can't yet see. I keep drawing on my own experiences with my own children, but I'm like, why can't you see this? Because he's a child. The brain, the cognitive abilities just haven't developed. Well, that's true spiritually also. Sometimes what we really need as spiritual leaders and as physical fathers is patience and understanding. There are things that they just can't yet see and can't yet do precisely because they haven't had the time and the experience that is necessary to grow into those abilities. Think about your child as he or she started to walk. They didn't just all of a sudden stand up and take off. I know some of you think they did. But there were other things that they went through, whether it was crawling and sitting up and moving in some ways. And even if they did just stand up and start to walk, what happened? They fell. They fell a lot. Why? Because they're children. They're still growing physically. Bones and muscles. They're still growing mentally, having the ability to process all the information that it takes to keep your balance and move forward without falling. I hope you understand what I'm getting at. The children of Israel here, yes, they didn't listen. And one of the reasons they didn't listen is because they were children. But that's not a problem that was or is particular to them. We still have those same problems. We still have. Even if we're mature in one way, we might be immature in another. That highlights the need for time, the need for experience, and the need for leadership to guide us through that immaturity. Before we get off of this, and hopefully I won't take as long with the other points, remember Ephesians 6 and verse 4 and Colossians 3:21 that talk about the physical responsibilities and the spiritual responsibilities that fathers have to their own children. But I want to also add to that Galatians the 4th chapter. In Galatians chapter 4 and in verse 19, listen closely to what Paul writes to the Galatians, which up to this point in this letter has been a stinging rebuke. It's been an angry letter. He says in verse 19, "My children, with whom I am again in labor until Christ is formed in you. How many times did you have to teach your children to show them how to tie their shoes? Pick a skill, pick an ability, whatever. The point is, as leaders, it's going to take some repetition, just like it did with your physical children. We need that repetition. Can I just, well, it's no use asking you because I'm not going to give you time to answer because you might say no. You know, one of the criticisms that we preachers hear, and I'm going to take up for preachers for just a second, is, well, he just repeats himself all the time. He just keeps repeating himself. Take that and set it over here for just a second. Ask that same person on a different time, how is it that we most often learn things? And they'll tell you right off the bat, by repetition. Now do you know perhaps why that preacher is repeating himself so often? It's because that's how we learn. And he's wanting you to learn the point or the points that he keeps repeating. Don't get impatient. That's how we learn. And still yet, understand you're not the only person in the pews. There are other people that may be more spiritually immature than you that didn't get it on the first time, that may not get it on the second time. It may take 3 or 4 times. So be patient with your preacher. Sermon ended. All right, let's look at our second point, which actually gets to the text. I'm sorry, I hate to keep drinking in front of you. This Coke is very good, by the way. But that helps me to not cough. At least that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Now let's look at our second point, which gets to the text itself. We've already bled over into this some. Obviously, the problem here is they didn't listen. Sheep don't listen well. That's why shepherds have a dog. Okay, maybe I carried that illustration a little too far, but that's why we as parents have to keep repeating things to ourselves because our children don't listen. Keep repeating things to our children because they don't listen. We repeat them to ourselves. That's a different issue. Got that problem too. Now, note from the first part of verse 9, and I don't want us to read over this. I told you earlier I would get back to it. So Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel. That part of the verse is important. It's important because, remember at the end of chapter 5, the Israelite foremen have gone and complained to their taskmasters. They said, wait, you don't understand. They went and cried to Pharaoh in chapter 5 and verse 15, thinking that he didn't understand what the taskmasters were expecting of them, that they were being required to make the same amount of bricks, but not being supplied with any straw. They were having to go throughout Egypt and gather the straw, and the taskmasters were also beating them, the foreman at least. So they go and complain to Pharaoh. That didn't work, so then they go and cry to Moses and Aaron. And in chapter 5 and verse 21, they said to them, that is Moses and Aaron, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and in the sight of his servants to put a sword in their hand to kill us. So they're just throwing their arms up here. You've made this worse, just leave us alone. It was better before you got here. Then Moses goes and cries out to the Lord and more or less repeats their complaint and somewhat questions and somewhat indicts God with those questions about not doing things the way that Moses and Israel had expected it to go. Chapter 6 and verse 1 begins with the word then. Then, and we've emphasized in several of these lessons the timing of all this, that God does things in His time and in His ways. So then the Lord said to Moses, now, as we emphasize in our previous class, now the Lord fully explains or at least more fully explains, what all's going on and why this is transpiring the way that it is. But he's speaking in verses 1 through 8 to Moses. That's in verse 1. So now in chapter 6 and verse 9, Moses spoke thus. All that God's just told him in verses 1 through 8. Now Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel. Why is that important? Because Moses has just given them, he's relayed to them what God has said to him. And in that message was contained all the information they needed to understand that there was a light at the end of this dark tunnel that they're in, and to proceed forward to that light. All the information they need is being given to them. It reminds me of 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3. I used to be a referee, but I'm getting out of practice with that. Divine power has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness. I don't think that passage is talking just about the inspired word, but it certainly includes that. All the information that we need is contained within God's word. And all that Israel needed to get through this dark, well, to see the light, first of all, and get through this dark tunnel to deliverance and ultimately to the promised land, it was all given to them in these 8 verses that have preceded. So Moses has done exactly what Moses is supposed to do. Listen to God and relay that to Israel. Listen to Israel and relay that to God. He's done both of those things in the latter part of chapter 5 and here in chapter 6 and verse 9. Moses is doing his job. He's not doing it particularly well in the latter part of chapter 5 because he let his emotions get a... He needed some leadership when he ought to have been the leader, perhaps. But who am I to sit in judgment over Moses? Yeah, I get that. So the first part of verse 9 is important, where he spoke everything that Israel needed to see the light, get through the dark tunnel, to deliverance from Egypt and to the promised land of Israel. But, that's a mighty big word for just 3 letters. But they did not listen to Moses. Now stop right there. We'll get to the reasons in just a moment. Here, I hope you understand why I spent so much time and belabored point number 1. They wouldn't and they didn't listen. Both physical and spiritual children have this tendency because they're children. Again, let that sink in. These Israelites in Exodus chapter 6 and verse 9 are as about as infantile of spiritual children of God as they can be. They wouldn't listen, they didn't listen, because things weren't working out the way or in the time frame that they wanted and they expected. How many of us have hurried into the kitchen, making a bottle and heating it up as fast as we could? Why? Because that infant was screaming in the other room. He or she knew what she wanted, but wasn't willing to wait for it. There was no patience there. That's what I'm wanting us to see about the Israelites. They're spiritually immature now. And so we look and say, well, they didn't listen. How many times have we said to our kids, you didn't listen? Why didn't they listen? Because they were kids, first of all. And that immaturity made it necessary to repeat the second and the third and the fourth and however many times it takes until they eventually get it. So I don't want us to be too critical of Israel here. It's easy to look and say, well, they didn't listen. They should have. God told Moses everything that they needed to hear. Moses told them everything that they needed to know, and yet they wouldn't listen. And we sit back and fold our arms and say, okay, I'm done. I told you everything you needed to know, and you didn't listen. Why not? Number one, point number one, they're sheep. They're spiritual children, immature as such. So, what are we leaders to do? If we're going to be leaders and we have someone who's spiritually immature, maybe they're not even born again yet, and we tell them everything they need to know to become a Christian or to grow out of spiritual immaturity to maturity, or at least to progress on that process, and they don't listen, what are we going to do? I told you, you wouldn't listen. You're on your own now. Is that what we did with our children when they were trying and struggling to tie their shoes or do some other task? I told you, the rabbit goes around the hole and then through the hole, around the tree and then through in the hole. What? How? I don't ever remember how that goes, obviously. Or do we instead continue patiently and consistently remind, reinforce, and reassure? I'll repeat those four things. Patiently remind, reinforce, and reassure. Patiently, that's attitude for us as leaders. Understanding that they're children, understanding that this repetition is going to be a necessary part of the process. So we are patient with them as we remind them what we've already perhaps told them. We reinforce why that's true and necessary and how it's going to work, and or how it, why it should work. And then we reassure them that it will work, that if they will do what it is that God's telling them that they should do, that light at the end of this dark tunnel therein will become visible, and they can proceed to, through the tunnel to that light and then bask in its glory. That's what good leaders do. A couple of quick passages. I know I'm taking longer with this than I should, but I think this lesson is important. It kind of struck a chord with me, as you can probably tell. In Hebrews, the 6th chapter, in the first 3 verses, you know, we looked at Hebrews 5, verses 11 through 14 earlier and highlighted that these were spiritually immature people that he was addressing. So what does he do? He's told them that solid food is for the mature. They're not there. So what does he do in the next verse of chapter 6 and verse 1? Therefore, leaving the elementary teaching about Christ, let us press on to maturity. He's giving them the information. He's reminded them, you had the milk. Now I'm going to give you something a little more. I'm going to give you some meat that you can press on with to maturity. Not laying again a foundation of repentance from dead works and of faith toward God and of instruction about washings and laying on of hands and the resurrection of the dead and eternal judgment. And this we will do if God permits. Now I want to remind you, I know this is, he's talking here to these people about utilizing some meat. He said, for them, it's time for you. It's past time for you. You should have already been doing this. You should be teaching others. So he's pushing them. But remember what he said to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 3. I have to give you milk. I wanted to give you meat, but you were not yet able because you're still fleshly. You're still immature, so he gave them more milk. See how this works? Look in 2 Peter. I'm not going to read this, but I want you to look at it so I can point some things out to you that we've talked about before. In 2 Peter chapter 1, notice verse 12. Peter says, I shall always be ready to remind you. Verse 13, stir you up by way of reminder. So that in verse 15, after I'm gone, at any time you can call to mind, you can remember. The third chapter. This now, beloved, the second letter I am writing to you, in which I am stirring up your sincere mind by way of reminder. Jude, verse 5. Now I desire to remind you, though you know all things once for all. He's putting a point on it, isn't he? I desire to remind you, though you know all things once for all, that the Lord, after saving a people out of the land of Egypt, subsequently destroyed those who did not believe. This passage seemed appropriate for us. He's talking about in Jude 5 the same people here. God saved them out of Egypt, even though they're not listening now. They're going to later. They're going to learn from the plagues as well as the Egyptians will. But they didn't continue in what they learned. And thus God destroyed them. How many times have we told our children, I've told you this over and over again. It's time now for you to learn. And if you don't, there are going to be consequences. See how that works? All right, moving on. Back to our text in Exodus chapter 6, verse 9. When I put a letter after the verse number, verse 9a, that's the first part of the verse. Verse 9b is the middle part of the verse. Verse C is the end of the verse. There might be a D or an E, depending on how many ways I've divided the verse up. I'm sorry, I just saw one of the comments there that tickled me. Okay, verse 9b. And what we're emphasizing from this verse, Moses spoke to the sons of Israel. They did not listen on account of their despondency. That word despondency caught my attention. That's not a common word even in the text. But it's amazing to me that it's exactly the right word if we understand what despondency means. The New American Standard that I prefer has a marginal reference there that defines that word as shortness of spirit. Think about that. Shortness of spirit. I looked up the Hebrew word, kotsar. Emphasis on the wrong syllable there for a second. And it's defined as shortness, impatience, and anguish. That's what despondency is. It includes those things. Other versions render that same kotsar as anguish of spirit in the King James, broken spirit in the ESV, or in the NIV, discouragement. You put all of those together and you get a perfect understanding, I think, of what this word actually means. It means that they wouldn't or couldn't listen because of their attitude. Their spirit was broken. Colossians 3 and verse 21, it's a Greek word and it's not even a parallel, but fathers are taught not to exasperate their children. They were exasperated because their spirits were broken. God speaks through Moses to them and says, okay, it's been 400 years. I'm aware of your situation. I'm going to do something about it. And they rejoice. And then it gets worse. And that wasn't what they expected. And now even when God tries to explain to them, they're not listening because their spirit's already broken. Again, think about that. When your children were small, you could speak harshly to them and their lip would pucker out and they begin to tremble and they would just fall apart. They were crushed. Why? Because they were children. As they got old, it took that board of correction maybe to get their attention for them to listen to you. But as infants, as small children, immature, The spirit is broken very easily. Why? Look at the last sentence. Or not the last sentence. The next sentence in that paragraph. They wouldn't or couldn't listen because of their attitude that stemmed from insufficient faith. That's where shortness of spirit comes from. That's where despondency comes from. Men of great faith, like Job, look at all that happened to him. And yet, how did he respond? He did not curse God. He blessed God and worshiped God, despite the darkness of the tunnel that he was in. He had lost his possessions and his family, and his wife may have left. She told him to curse God and die. He's lost everything, physical, his livestock, his servants, his children. But he wasn't despondent. At least his faith got him through that, to be able to bless God and not give up. Middle of that third paragraph, remember that they hadn't seen. And I highlighted this on my outline. And it simply underscores again the reasons for immaturity here. Remember that Israel hadn't heard or seen from Moses in 40 years until recently. Now, we talked about how that Stephen says in Acts 7, that Moses understood even before he left Egypt that he was to be the deliverer. Whether or not Israel understood that or not, I don't know, but they haven't seen Moses for 40 years until just recently. Think further with me. And I don't mean this as an excuse. They hadn't previously heard from God for the last 400 years. At least there's no record of it. Now Moses returns. God speaks through him, at last promising deliverance and a homeland, and they're rejoicing. But when things didn't proceed at the pace that they desired or expected, and their situation got even worse, that immature faith couldn't sustain hope. Now, think about it. Romans 10:17. Most of you can quote it. Faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. How much of that have they had? Even for Moses after his return, how much of the word of God have they had? How much faith could they have? Again, I think we look at this passage in Exodus 6 and verse 9 and say, they wouldn't listen. They should have listened. Yeah, so should our kids. So should we as immature Christians. We should listen too, but there are probably reasons why we're not. One of them may well be immature, short faith, weak faith. They haven't had a lot of word from God to build faith that was strong, that was mature to this point. So again, I'm not trying to excuse them. I'm helping us to, as leaders, understand because we're going to face the same kinds of problems when we deal with spiritually immature people. And if they weren't spiritually immature, they wouldn't need leadership from us. Okay? This kind of thing happens often to children at home in the Lord. Good leaders, look at the last sentence there, third paragraph. Good leaders expect, are prepared, and meet that situation with reminders, guidance that bolsters that weak faith into spiritually enhanced vision so that they can see now that light at the end of the dark tunnel that they're in, so that they can have spiritually enhanced courage to move forward, even though they're in that dark tunnel, toward the light that they can now see, and perseverance to get all the way to the end where that light is. Read it with me. 1 Thessalonians 5:14. We've read this passage a number of times. We'll probably read it a few more times before we're done with this series. 1 Thessalonians 5:14. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, the weak-hearted, more literally. Help the weak, be patient with all men. Similar passage in Hebrews, the 12th chapter. Notice that passage, Hebrews 12:12-13. Hebrews 12, verses 12 and 13. Therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble. Make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strengthen that weak faith. Expect that the immature are not going to listen the first time. Doesn't mean you shouldn't tell them. Doesn't mean you shouldn't show them the right way to do it. Tell them, show them, encourage them. But because they are immature and needing leadership, you need to be the grown-up. You need to expect this to occur. You need to be prepared for it to happen. And you need to meet it with those reminders and guidance that grows that weak faith into spiritually enhanced vision, courage, and perseverance. That's what 1 Thessalonians 5:14, that's what Hebrews 12:12-13 are talking about. Fourth point. Because of their cruel bondage. Okay, now we're to it. Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel. They did not listen to Moses on account of their despondency, their shortness of spirit, and cruel bondage. I looked at several different translations. Most major translations render the Hebrew here exactly as the New American Standard does, cruel bondage. The one notable exception to that was the ESV, which says harsh slavery. Let's not make light or ignore completely the realities of their situation. They've been slaves for 400 years, and their bondage has gotten a lot worse recently. They were slaves before, but go back and read chapter 5, verses 7 through 14, and realize how much worse it got. It's one thing to be making bricks with all the supplies there, but when you have to go get the supplies yourself, gather the straw from all over Egypt and get it there, and do so without reducing the quota of daily quota of bricks that you had to make, it got a lot worse. And then their taskmasters, I have trouble with that, taskmasters start beating them, calling them lazy. It got a lot worse for them. This wasn't just all in their minds, and it wasn't just the result of an immature faith. They were in a bad situation. The reality of their current situation wasn't matching what they had been told about the Lord's awareness and concern and how He's going to remedy their situation. It got worse. Go back and read chapter 3, verses 7 and 8, and chapter 4, and verse 31, where God says, I'm aware, I know what's happening, it's time for this to end. Well, apparently not on the time frame that they expected. And as we've noticed in previous lessons, sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. If we're going to be spiritual leaders, we have to remind those that we're trying to help exactly of that. Use Exodus chapter 5 and Exodus chapter 6 to show them. Jesus talked about counting the cost of discipleship in a couple of places, primarily Luke 14, verses 26 down through the end of that chapter. There is a cost factor. But their situation has gotten a lot worse here. And if we're going to help people get through those dark tunnels in their lives, where maybe after their initial being born again into Christ, things got a lot worse for them physically, Satan lashed out because he's lost one and made their life tough, maybe a living hell. If we're going to guide them, how are we going to do it? Are we going to remind them of Israel and how that their situation got worse before it got better? Are we going to show them that, yeah, you're in a dark tunnel? But are we going to build their faith so that they can see the light at the end of it, move forward toward it, and persevere by getting to the end of that dark tunnel, in which things get a lot better, even for Israel? They do gather free. It's going to take 10 plagues, but they're going to get their freedom. They're going to plunder the wealth of the Egyptians, and they're given the promised land of Canaan. He's going to fight their battles for them. But they have to have faith in and patience with God and God's process and God's timing. That's what we as leaders have to remember and remind them. Faith in God, patience with God's process and God's timing. Those are exactly the lessons that we as good leaders must know and must convey to those who want to believe and do what's right, but the difficulties of their personal circumstances make it really hard to persevere, especially to do so with patience. A couple final passages and we'll quickly go through the questions. And I mean quickly because I've spent way more time on this than I wanted. And 1 Peter 4, just listen to a couple of things that I want to read you here. 1 Peter 4, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. What purpose? To suffer in the flesh. Because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of your time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. Notice verses 12 and following. Same chapter, 1 Peter 4. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing. See, that's why I said that this situation is, yes, for Egypt, but also for Israel. For your testing. As though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree, this is verse 13, 1 Peter 4, but to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of His glory, you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. You know, people that have a immature, and perhaps necessarily so, faith because of the newness of it, that are going through tough times, talk to them about Israel and Egypt. Talk to them about 1 Peter chapter 4. Talk to them about Luke the 14th chapter, verses 26 and following. I hope all of these things, the 4 points that we've covered as well as the introduction, help us to understand the need not only for leadership, but how to be good leaders. It's going to take patience. It's going to take repetition. It's going to take reinforcement. It's going to take encouragement. All of those things. Just remember how you had to repeat yourself over and over to your children. Well, it's not that different for spiritual children. They need a lot of repetition, a lot of reinforcement, a lot of encouragement, and a lot of patience. Questions, real quickly. Number one, generally, why did Israel and do we as sheep need leadership? I hope you got this from the introduction. That's what I was driving at. That may not be the best way to word that question. The short answer is because they and we are God's children, and because we're sheep. John 10, verses 1 through 30, and 1 Peter 2, 25. Number 2, from Hebrews 11, verses 11 through 14, What is required to discern good and evil? Time to have grown into maturity, and practice and repetition that will produce experience. That's what it takes to have your senses trained to discern good and evil. Time to have grown into maturity, and practice and repetition that produces experience. Number three, given the answers to the previous question, what should good leaders do to help and guide the spiritually immature to maturity? I listed several here. I'm going to name them off real quickly for you. Number one, be patient. Number two, expect them to fall and to make childlike mistakes. That doesn't mean to excuse them. Paul held the Corinthians accountable in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. The Hebrew writer is holding the Hebrews accountable as well. But just understand that they're going to fall and make childlike mistakes. Number three, act and treat them accordingly, because they are children. They are immature. They're going to make those mistakes. So don't expect or treat them as adults. They're not there yet. Don't coddle them, but don't expect them to be adults, and don't act and treat them like adults while they're still spiritually immature. The passage I use there, Ephesians 6:4, Colossians 3:21, specifically for fathers, Galatians 5 and verse 14, where Paul was a spiritual father to the Galatians. I also added in there 1 Corinthians 3, verses 1 through 3, where he didn't coddle or excuse them. He held them accountable. Question number four. Generally, what contributed to Israel's refusal to listen to Moses? And then follow up, what should good leaders today do when they're attempting to help those who won't listen? Generally, and that's what the question asks. And again, I'm trying to kind of parse this out. We're going to get to the specifics in just a moment. But generally, I believe the reason that Israel refused to listen to Moses is because they had immature faith. Do this for me. Jot these passages down from Matthew. Matthew 6 and verse 30. All of these are in Matthew. Matthew 6 and verse 30. Chapter 8, verse 26, chapter 14, verse 31, chapter 16 and verse 8, and chapter 17 and verse 20. Now I'll tell you what those passages are. In each of those passages, Jesus is telling someone they've got a weak or a little faith. In chapter 6 and verse 30, it's see the lilies of the field, how they grow and they don't toil, they don't spin, and yet God clothes them. Chapter 8 and verse 26, Jesus is somewhat rebuking his disciples when he has to calm the sea. He was asleep, and they, Master, were perishing. Oh, you have little faith. Chapter 14 and verse 31, Peter is attempting to walk on the water, but takes his eyes off Jesus and begins to sink. He says, if your faith had not been weak, you wouldn't have sunk. Chapter 16 and verse 18, the disciples said, we don't have any bread to feed all these people. And he said, because of the smallness or littleness of your faith, you ask, we have no bread, or say we have no bread, knowing full well that if they had a stronger faith, that he could have supplied the bread. In chapter 17 and verse 20, the disciples ask him why they couldn't cast the demon out. He said, because of the weakness of your faith. In each case, there was something that should have been accomplished that wasn't because of that weak faith. These children of Israel in Exodus chapter 6 and verse 9 should have listened, but because of the weakness or smallness of their faith, they didn't and perhaps couldn't. Number five, not couldn't in the sense that it was impossible, couldn't in the sense that they weren't mature enough to have actually listened and worked through the situation. Number five, what does verse 9b mean when it says the people wouldn't listen because of their despondency? Again, that shortness of spirit, impatience, anguish of spirit, broken spirit, all of those things, discouragement. Why do you suppose they were so despondent? all of these things are attitudinal. It's an attitude issue. An attitude issue that stems from insufficient faith. Why were they despondent? Because their faith wasn't sufficient for them to be anything else. They couldn't correlate the darkness of the tunnel that they were in with what they knew that God had told them about their deliverance. Their faith wasn't mature enough to see through that tunnel to the light at its end. Number six, what should good leaders do to help and guide the despondents? Number one, expect that kind of despondency to occur. Number two, be prepared for it. Number three, meet it with reminders. That's 2 Peter 1, 13 through 15, as well as chapter 3 and verse 1 and Jude verse 5. To meet it with reminders and guidance. Yes, you're in a dark tunnel, but look, there's a light at the end. Let's go there together. Bolster that weak faith into something more from 1 Thessalonians 5:14 and Hebrews 12, verses 12 and 13. Number seven. To what else does verse 9c also attribute Israel's unwillingness to listen to Moses and therefore to God? The cruel bondage is the answer that we're looking there for. It refers back to chapter 5, verses 10 through 14 of having to go collect their own straw and still meet the same quota of bricks, as well as the beatings which the foreman also inflicted upon them. And by the way, those beatings, if you read that text carefully, it seems to be in verse 14 of chapter 5 that the Israelite foremen were beaten, but that may have trickled down to those under them as well, their fellow Hebrews. I think that's all. No, there was another note that I had. No, never mind. Number eight. How should good leaders, that should be, what should good leaders do to help and guide those experiencing persecution today? Remind them, look, we told you this might get better before it gets worse. That's not an I told you so, that's a reminder. Wait a minute, we talked about this before. Remember Luke 14? Jesus said there was a cost to discipleship. It may cost you your family, may cost you your job. There may be other costs associated with this. We talked about that before you were ever baptized, hopefully. So, reminders of the cost of discipleship. Look at the light. Hebrews 12. I didn't emphasize this when I was there earlier, so I'm going to now, even though I'm all over time. Hebrews 12 and verse 2. Remember, he's been talking to those, are talking about those who've lost their lives in faith, still acting faithfully before God, and it cost them their lives. So he says in verse 1, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Get it from verse 2. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. I really don't like that translation of author, because when you and I hear author, not that it's a bad translation, but when you and I hear that, we think writer. The guy that's responsible. Jesus didn't just write our salvation. The word archagos, the Greek word that's translated as author, archagos, doesn't mean just one who writes. It's a pioneer, one who goes before and blazes the trail to make it easier for those who would follow after him. When we talk about the light that's at the end of the tunnel, Jesus has been through that tunnel already, and he's shining a light for us at the end of us. So we know at the end of the tunnel, so we know which way to go. If you're ever in a very dark place where you can't see your hand in front of your face, and someone over near the door lights a single match, you've got a point of reference. You know which way to go. You can get out now. Jesus isn't just a single match. There's a bright light there at the end of this tunnel. So fix your eyes on Jesus. He's already been through a tunnel that's much worse than the one that you're in. And he's waiting at the end with a light so you know which way to go to get out of that tunnel. Look at the light. And then number four, yes, you can. Look at others who've gone before you. Go back and read Hebrews 12, verse 1 again. Look at all this great cloud of witnesses surrounding us. And he's talking about the people in chapter 11 who did persevere, who did live in faith. Yes, you can do this. It's our purpose to follow Jesus, even if it costs us persecution. That's 1 Peter 3, verses 20 and 21. So expect that persecution. Bow your neck and endure that persecution. Because 1 Peter 4, verses 1 and 2 and 12 through 16 say that it is our purpose and that we should be able to endure it. That we shouldn't suffer as a murderer or as a troublesome meddler, but that if we suffer for the cause of Christ, for the name of Christ, we should glory in that name. Okay, folks, I'm sorry. I'm a little over time. I hope it's been worthwhile to you. I've enjoyed it. I hope you can sense that it is my passion and enthusiasm for these lessons that gets the better of me sometimes, and they go a little longer than perhaps they should. But thanks so much for joining us. Look forward, Lord willing, to being with you again next week. We'll get a few more verses from chapter 6. I think it's verses 10 through 13, and then down in verse 30. I'd have to go back and look at my notes more specifically, but hope you can join us again next week. Good night, everybody.